de Derechos Humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a una atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end. so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundación Xiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
Ride, 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 snow winding its way down your road or maybe just smacking you right in the eyes. It's the Bathrop Spears Broadside Show, 1st of September, 2022. Looks like lots of interviews, a bit of article reading, a snatchet or two of an interview from the latest tough meeting, which was today, if you're listening to this on September 1st. Do not have, however, unfortunately, the deputy accountability proposal that was partially webcast, or I should say zoomed, our way. But the sound gave out, thank you. I think it was their fault, not ours, or not mine. But in any case, this is what you get.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And fresh from a mini Huff meeting, which was sparsely attended, kind of remembering the main purpose that we, I guess, I was trying to encourage people to get focused on, was the support of the benchlands as they attempt to confront the reality of the city's fabrications and force that threatens to come down soon, although we don't know when. We're not getting specifics from Matt Huffaker, the city manager, nor are we getting clarity by postings that would tell people how many days they have before they're going to have to magically evaporate. And the excuses for this are that their authorities are proceeding in a very methodical way. They don't want to disturb anyone's sleep or lodgings, that they aren't going to be rushing people away. They're going to pause if they don't have adequate lodging. And frankly, I maintain what I regard as it's both a caustic and a healthy skepticism about this claim. So the plan the plan is to meet tomorrow. That's on the 2nd of September. If you're listening to this, that's when we met, if you're listening beyond that time, at the Benchlands, and that's going to be at Troy's place. Troy is a guy who lives in the Benchlands, and he actually came to the meeting. And he is the only tent I know of in the Benchlands that actually has a physical wooden door on his tent. And he says the way to find this meeting at 3 p.m., which is about Benchlands resistance and defense, is to go to the little kind of makeshift, I haven't seen it, but I've heard it described, kind of, I don't know whether it's a tent or a modular building or something, but it's something which the county or perhaps the city has set up right in the back of the county building, between the county building and the Benchlands. And as you stand there looking out over the Benchlands, you will see solar panels. And right next to the solar panels is Troy's tent, which is fairly near the Water Street entrance. That's one of the quickest ways to find it, is to go down the Water Street entrance or to go down the first pathway stairway that leads down from the county building. And we intend to be in front of, we being the Union of the Homeless, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the Food Not Bombs with coffee, and I guess Keith has promised to bring Union of the Homeless T-shirts, which hopefully will not only simply be a nice visual display, because there's a protest march planned at 4:30 to go to the front of the county building and make ourselves visible and express our concerns about the fabrications of the city and the county, the possible mismanagement of funds as being used, that was apportioned for homeless folks, and the millions that have disappeared or have not really issued in real shelter or services, not much less housing. So that's coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Friday the 2nd. And come on down. Help support, help learn what's going on the benchlands, help to break the fear narrative, which is being pushed by the city and by some city workers, I kind of feel, although I'm not naming any names at the moment. So let's begin with some clips from, or at least sections from, the Union of the Homeless / Huff / Food Not Bombs presentation at the Resource Center for Nonviolence last Monday, the 29th, which was the, I guess it was the third meeting thereabouts that we've had. Anyways, I'm a little muddled whether it was the second or the third, but I think I was told today it was the third. I'm going to run with that one. Here's a clip from 40 minutes into the meeting. I'd often feared that this meeting would be another talk session, another gripe session, another best wishes session, but things got better. And here's, this may be around the point when, if the meeting didn't just start to turn here in a more action direction, this was, I think, some of the inspiration for it.
Let's see, what else do we...
This is Keith McHenry.
Anybody have any suggestions on if there is a raid besides blocking off one end or something like that? Is there any ideas of what we could do? You want to come up and...
There are numerous good speakers. The problem was some folks were reluctant to come to the mic and spoke from where they were standing or sitting, and so it was hard to hear. Here's one of the first speakers that you could actually hear. This is Elise.
What if we were to organize, as you just mentioned, and I think some other people have, what if we were to organize something, for example, a site somewhere? I don't want to like put it on live stream so that all the cops can just hear it. But a place nearby in the city limits of Santa Cruz where we have people put their possessions and we have people watch them. So kind of maybe a changing guard. And it could also be a place where people are going to move to, just to try to do as much proactive work as we can do for people to get some of their most important items out of there. So, like, people could each have a garbage bag with what they need, maybe some important stuff that they need. Not things like birth certificates and diamond rings, but things like underwear and change of clothes and a sleeping bag or stuff like that. Anyway, just one idea. And there are places around here where we could do that, where we could squat on the land and set up a kind of guard. The other thing that I wanted to ask people to do is, and this is really a question for you, my understanding of Martin versus Boise is they have to provide places indoors. And there has to be a place for everyone indoors.
And Martin versus Boise, of course, is the court decision which says no tickets for camping or arrests for camping or hassles for camping unless you have a place for people to go that is relatively decent and less of a threat than where they are.
I vehemently disagree with most of this shuttle stuff because unless somebody really needs the help, which is, I'm more than happy to have shuttles for people who need the shuttles. But for most of us, it's an impediment to living our lives to have to go somewhere and show up at a shuttle.
So shuttling, what she's referring to is the current procedure and process that awaits people who go up to the armory shelter. They are only available, they can only reach the shelter by shuttle. They have hours, they have curfew, and they are essentially kept at a distant area from town. They can only, if they're gone for more than a day or two, there's a penalty. It's not a an adult living situation in the way that normal rental property is, or motels are, or even the way people have been lodged in the COVID times when they were in the, I believe, in the motels. Although maybe there were more restrictive conditions in some of the motels, but they were downtown, they were more accessible. And I think that's, right now, the only proposal is a shuttle system, which was abandoned at the 1220 River Street. People can walk in and out of River Street, though they were originally considered such viral dangers to the community or such a public safety hazard that they not only had to go in and out by shuttle, but they also had a police substation stationed nearby when the 1220 River Street opened. I think it was in 2018 or 2019, thereabouts. But this time they realized no one's going to want to come to that, or at least it'll be less appealing. It isn't the most wonderfully appealing place anyway, given the fact that it's hot in the summer and it's less closely packed together than it was. But in any case, it's full. And so the 30-odd spaces that are there are irrelevant to dealing with the benchlands, as much of the armory and the overlook is irrelevant because it's full. There are some beds that are being intentionally kept open, I should say, spaces. They aren't beds, really. Usually they're, I don't know whether they're, I'm not sure if they're beds or tents, but more likely would be my speculation, tents. And then there's some possible, I call them dog houses, but they're a bit better than dog houses in the Coral Street area that are not heated and are not cooled and have various problems, but they have some kinds of privacy. But they are also within a sort of contained, concentrated area. I don't think they put a curfew on folks during the COVID times. But anyway, that's the explanation of the shuttle issue.
All this, you know, administration, you have to sign this, you have to register that. It's an impediment to life. And what I'm really getting down to here, those two suggestions. One, that we find out how many indoor places they're actually offering, and how about a group of people from the benchlands go with, like, let's say Keith. I like how I volunteer Keith, or me, or somebody, but somebody like Alicia Kuhl, the chairperson of the Homeless Union, or Keith, to the visit before they clear the site and say, we want to see the sites that you're planning on putting us at, because according to Martin versus Boise, you have to have indoor sites. Because the city has played this game for years upon years upon years, and fundamentally, as far as I'm concerned, the game is, we don't count. You're actually not a real citizen, you're not a real person, you don't have property, you're living on the benchlands, you might as well, you know, they treat us very, very badly. And that is really fundamentally what needs to stop. They have to see us as people, as citizens, that they are legally, and completely responsible for, under their jurisdiction as representatives. This has to stop. And so one way to do that, to be proactive, is to go to them whenever you think. It could be when the 3-day notice hits, it could be before, and say, we need to talk to you because we have X amount of people at benchlands roughly on any given day. We want to see your sites because we happen to know that according to Martin versus Boise, you're required to provide a roof over our heads with, and find out what Yes.
Although it needs to be pointed out, or I feel like I need to point out, that when the injunction against the removal of people from the San Lorenzo Park area in the winter of 2020 happened, due to a combination of community presence that came and held off the police with their bodies by simply being there and demanding that they leave or provide adequate alternatives rather than just get out, which is what the police were demanding under Andy Mills and Martine Bernal, then the city manager. But what the court ruled was that they had to provide accommodations in the benchlands in tents, not in housing, indoor housing. So the demand, the supposed demand that you have to go inside indoor housing, which is what Attorney Anthony Prince, who's the counsel for various Union of the Homeless groups throughout the state and an organizer for the Union of the Homeless, was demanding in, for example, the Ross Camp arguments of some years ago, which he lost in court, but not necessarily due to the weakness of his arguments, but to the essentially the misstatements, lies, and credulousness of the the lies of Susie O'Hara and the staff of the city, who claimed they had adequate housing for people, or at least shelter for people, and they didn't. They lied about it. And the argument that there is a requirement for indoor shelter, I'm not aware that it's actually been bought in any location, even though it may have been referenced in the actual Idaho Martin versus Boise decision. And not entirely sure about that. There was a recent decision in Nevada providing a two-year lease for Camp Compassion, which was the homeless encampment, but I think it was the camp. It wasn't the provision of alternate indoor shelter. So, don't know if one can make that demand. One can insist on that. One can argue it in court, and maybe one can win. But I'm not aware that it's been accepted as a precedent yet.
All the time, not building low-income housing, not building government-subsidized housing, giving away housing to the rich, ducking out of our actual laws, like Measure O, that required a certain amount of affordable housing. They ducked out of that one. Affordable housing is already kind of expensive. They do this because the citizens and we are letting them treat us like this, but we want to be careful. We want to protect our possessions. So anyway, those are my three ideas. To recap, versus Boise, a group of people who represent the benchlands or whatever go with some representatives like Keith and Alicia of the Homeless Union in advance and say, show us the site. So that way we have some precedent. We can say, well, what, you have 60 sites indoors and you're giving us your stinky tents again outside at a place that we have to take some stupid shuttle and interfere with our job bunch and anything else we're doing? We're going to stay here and under the law of Martin versus Boise and our constitutional rights and the fact that we're human beings and we're not going to do this unless you really like it and you want to go, fine. That, and then also, what was the other thing I said? I forget. Storage. Yeah, and the last thing that, the bottom line is that we have to help people, if they don't already feel this, that the city is in the business of giving away tremendous entitlements, giving away our land, giving away resources. They're squatting on that place downtown where they're building this gargantuan, anti-climate change, massive, horrible, happiness for the rich building. I mean, we have to say, look, you built how many units there? We want another X amount of units built over here, like right now, and stop paying the cops and the police because we want permanent housing. And until you cough up a legitimate amount of permanent housing for us citizens, for us people, 10% of the point of time count, 10% for women, 10% for men, 10% for people with special needs, whatever. And then you can say you've done your part, and another city has to do more. But just to continue with this Mickey Mouse bullshit, you know, hey, you can have a 10, You can be however old you are, and you can crouch in line under the hot sun for how many hours before we pick you up and drive you over, interrupt your life so you can stay in a sticky tent outside of our golf course? Come on, give me a break.
And the city won't, but I'm going to give everyone a break with a brief bit of music from David Rovics.
His family moved from Denver to Aurora. Mama thought they'd be safer out there, away from all the hubbub of the city, closer to the mountains and fresh air, fancy cars and football, getting lots of tattoos on their shin. But Elijah played the violin. Some kids are into hamburgers and hot dogs. Other kids just do things their own way. Elijah was a vegetarian. On his lunch breaks, he would go and play. Music for the animals at the shelter. Staff would welcome their young comrade with a grin. Elijah played the violin. As a young man, Elijah moved in with his cousin. He became a massage therapist. He had a kind and open hand, while others only knew the fist, such as the men in blue, who were called one night to assault their unknown kin. Elijah played the violin. They slammed him into the wall, they threw him to the ground. Although he made no effort to fight back, they choked him till he vomited, and then they did it more. The body cams recorded the attack. Elijah said he couldn't breathe, he was begging for his life. So they shot him full of ketamine. Elijah played the violin. He went into cardiac arrest soon after he was dead. He had not committed one offense. Aside from being black in these disunited states and trying to exist in the present tense, nothing happened to the cops. They were just following procedures, killing people for the color of their skin. Elijah played the violin. Elijah played the violin. Elijah played the violin.
And that, what you could hear of it, and at least toward the end it became far more audible, the words, was Elijah played the violin. That was another police murder, as Rovick saw it, by the cops of an African American. I think I've actually played this David Rovick song before. Here's a story about it, because now I remember hearing about it in, the incident happened in 2019, so it was some time ago, but here's a story from the U.S. Sun. It's that's an online newspaper. I'm not sure if it's otherwise than that. Justice for Elijah McClain. What happened to the police officers who were involved in his death, by Katrina Schoenberg, a burger. This is November 18th, 2021. The tragic death of Elijah McClain back in 2019 shocked the world and left many unanswered questions among the public. McClain was a 23-year-old black man who had the police called on him for acting, quote, suspicious, and died as a result of his encounter with them. What happened to Elijah McClain? McClain went out to purchase iced tea from his local convenience store on August 24, 2019. He wore a ski mask over his face as he was anemic and was sensitive to the cold. On his way home, Aurora PD officers received a phone call complaint of a suspicious man walking around the neighborhood. Upon arrival, they placed McClain in a chokehold as McClain reportedly gasped for air and pleaded that he couldn't breathe. He vomited, panicked, and was then reportedly injected with ketamine by paramedics in an effort to sedate him. The drug caused the young man to go into cardiac arrest on his way to the hospital. He fell into a coma and 3 days later was pronounced dead. According to CBS4, which apparently is a news service, the city of Aurora has agreed to pay $15 million to the family of McLean over his death. The sum was confirmed to the outlet by three sources familiar with the tentative agreement. City officials acknowledged an agreement was reached, but refused to provide details to the public until the deal was finalized. What police officers were involved August 24, 2019? The officers involved in the incident have reportedly been named as Nathan Woodyard, Joseph Rosenblatt, and Randy Radima. They were said to have used carotid pressure hold to restrain McLean, a controversial method designed to immobilize a suspect by blocking the neck artery and, by extension, the flow of blood to the brain, according to NBC News. In body cam footage obtained by McLean's family, an officer reportedly threatens him for struggling. One of the officers says, "Don't move again. If you move again, I'm calling in a dog to bite you," according to a Change.org petition. Have they been charged? The officers on the scene were placed on temporary leave, but at the time were back in the field with no charges. At the time of McLean's death, Denver 7 News stated they couldn't determine whether McLean's death was an accident, was due to natural causes, or is a homicide related to the police department's use of a carotid hold. In November, Adams County prosecutors announced they would not file any criminal charges against the officers who were involved in the detention and arrest of McLean. Based on the investigation presented and the applicable Colorado law, there is no reasonable likelihood of success in proving any state crimes beyond a reasonable doubt at trial, District Attorney Dave Young said in his letter to Aurora Police Chief Nick Metz. Therefore, no state criminal charges will be filed as a result of this incident. The hashtag Justice for Elijah McLean began circulating on Twitter, calling for a reinvestigation into the case. In September of 2021, it was reported that a Colorado grand jury indicted three police officers and two paramedics involved in the death of McLean. Officers Rodima, Woodyard, former officer Rosenblatt were indicted along with Aurora Fire Rescue paramedics Jeremy Cooper and Peter Kushnick. Each faces charges of manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide as part of a 32-count indictment. In addition, Rodima and Rosenblatt were each indicted on one count of assault and one count of crime of violence, and Cooper and Kucinich were each indicted on three counts of assault and six counts of crime of violence. What were Elijah McLean's last words? Twitter users claim Elijah's last words were, "I'm an introvert. I'm just different, that's all. I'm so sorry. I don't have a gun. I don't do that stuff. All I was trying to do is become better. I'll do it. You all are phenomenal. You are beautiful, and I love you, and try to forgive me. I'm sorry." According to reports, as he was being choked, McLean reportedly said he could not breathe, much like the George Floyd case. He was described as nothing but positive by his cousin, sweet by his sister, and an introvert who sought peace in his life by his mother. And that's a story by the U.S. Sun. Tragic death, tragic justice for Elijah McLean by Katrina Schollenberger, which was written on November 18th of 2021. And here's additional footage, or I should say reportage, from the... looks like a police accountability website, the Free Thought Project, again around the time when the cops were finally indicted. And I'm still looking for information about what actually happened to them. But there's some interesting new details. The charges came after an independent investigation commissioned by the city, which found the police had no legal basis to stop McLean that night, as he had broken absolutely no law. According to the Denver Post, investigation also found the department's own investigation conducted by detectives in the Major Crimes Unit was deeply flawed and steered to exonerate the officers involved. The detectives failed to ask basic critical questions of the officers involved in McLean's death, and instead the questions frequently appeared designed to elicit specific exonerating magic language found in court rulings, the report says. In addition, the report of the major crime unit stretched the facts to exonerate the officers rather than present a neutral version of the facts. It's hard to imagine any other persons involved in a fatal shooting being interviewed as these officers were, the investigators continued. The body-worn camera audio, limited video, and major crime interviews with the officers tell two contrasting stories, the report says. The officers' statements on the scene and in subsequent recorded interviews suggest a violent and relentless struggle. The limited video and the audio from the body-worn cameras reveal Mr. McLean surrounded by officers, all larger than he, crying out in pain, apologizing, explaining himself, and pleading with the officers. The investigation also implicated the EMTs who showed up and injected McLean with ketamine at the request of the officers. Aside from blindly following cops' orders to inject someone with ketamine, EMTs also failed to accurately determine Mr. McLean's weight, leading to the 140-pound innocent man receiving a dose for a 190-pound man. Aurora Fire seems to have accepted the officer's impression that Mr. McLean had excited delirium, which I think has since been dismissed by at least some police agencies as any kind of actual legitimate finding of anything, without corroborating that impression through meaningful an observation or diagnostic examination of Mr. McLean, the investigators wrote. At the time of his death, McLean had never gotten so much as a speeding ticket in his life. Moments after police approached McLean claiming that he fit the description of a suspect, they claimed that he resisted arrest and needed to be subdued. McLean had committed no crime when police initiated force against him. He was merely walking home from a store after purchasing some tea. At the time, police claimed body camera footage showed McLean reaching for a gun, but this was unsubstantiated. At a press conference after police killed him, Police Chief Metz told reporters that Elijah grabbed the grip of an officer's holstered gun. A struggle ensued to the ground, where three body-worn cameras did become dislodged. But this was simply not true. He is laying on the ground, vomiting. He is begging. He is saying, "I can't breathe." One of the officers says, "Don't move again. If you move again, I'm calling a dog to bite you," said Mari Newman, the McLean's lawyer, completely dismantling the official story. During the altercation, he was placed in a carotid restraint, a technique that was recently banned by the Aurora Police Department. When McLean was restrained, the Aurora Fire Department was called to the scene to give him ketamine, a strong sedative, and we've heard about that already. McLean went into heart arrest twice on the way to the hospital. And I've already read to you his dying words. So I do find on Wikipedia this statement. In April 2022, all five of those indicted, Redema, Rosenblatt, Cooper, Kucinich, and Woodyard, were still free on bond. On June 27, 2020, thousands of people gathered for a day of protests, speaker presentations, and an evening with violent concert at Aurora City Central Park. Before the protests began, Aurora police issued a statement in support of a peaceful protest, but warned of, quote, outsiders whose goal, they said, is to be destructive. Government buildings were boarded up and police sat atop City Hall and the library observing the protest. No arrests were reported during the day, although both directions of Interstate 225 Highway were shut down around 3 p.m. by thousands of marching protesters. In the evening, people, including families with children, began to gather in City Center Park, and musicians formed a circle and began to play a violin concert in honor of McLean, who was known to be an accomplished player. At that time, police announced the protest was now a, quote, illegal gathering, and ordered people to leave the park or they would use pepper spray to disperse them. Shortly thereafter, police dressed in riot gear moved into the crowd. Several attendees reported smoke and gas canisters were used. The police statement later reported that pepper spray was used after a small group of people gathered rocks and sticks, knocked over a fence, and ignored orders to move back. Various videos showed attendees seated on the public lawn without any such actions. Five attendees of the protest have sued the Aurora Police Department and its interim chief, accusing them of unconstitutional treatment. Their lawsuit also demands that the Aurora Police Department stop using chemical agents, stop shooting projectiles indiscriminately into crowds, allow crowd dispersal only when there is an urgent danger to other people, and require all police to have their body cameras on at all times. On June 29, 2020, there was an event in honor of Elijah McClain in California. It was organized by Black Women Lead, took place at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, and was called the Violin Candlelight Vigil for Elijah. And there's more about protests in different places. Following the summer protests, the Aurora Police Department arrested organizers involved with the Party for Socialism and Liberation and local groups on charges ranging from inciting a riot to kidnapping. This was in response to a protest on July 3rd, where Aurora Police Precinct was surrounded by protesters calling for the officers responsible for McClain's death to be fired and charged. On September 17th, six organizers, Russell Rutsch, Joel Nutharn, Lillian House, Eliza Lucero, Trey Quinn, and Terrence Roberts were arrested. Northam was arrested with the aid of a SWAT team and armored vehicle, while Roberts was apprehended while on a jog. Others were arrested at home or at work. The charges could have resulted in up to 48 years in prison for House, Northam, and Lucero. On March 12th, 2021, Judge Leroy Kirby dismissed the kidnapping charges against House, Lucero, and Northam, noting that if the warrants for their arrest had been presented to him, he would not have signed them. On April 4, 2021, Arapahoe County District Attorney John Keller dismissed all felony charges and major misdemeanor charges against the protesters. On May 6, 2021, Adams County DA Brian Mason dismissed all charges in Adams County against the protesters, stating that he has an ethical obligation to proceed on charges his office can prove and to dismiss charges that they cannot prove. On September 13, 2021, all remaining charges against House, Lucero, and Northam were dropped. McClain's family subsequently filed a civil rights lawsuit against the city. They got a settlement agreement, as I've mentioned before. It was finalized with the city of Aurora paying $15 million to McClain's family. But I don't see anything regarding whatever happened to the murdering cops and those who assisted in this killing with the ketamine injections. What's interesting to me is that this description that I've just read you is on Wikipedia, which is not usually terribly sympathetic to protesters or to those who are murdered by the police. But apparently in this case, the evidence was so overwhelming that they went into some detail. They also added that McClain's autopsy was inconclusive. Cause of death was listed as undetermined, as I mentioned before, by the coroner. Aurora police met with the coroner before his announcement, and police investigators were also present during the autopsy. On June 24, 2020, after a social media outcry and Aurora lawmakers' request for a new third-party investigation into McClain's death, Colorado Governor Jared Polis, announced his administration would re-examine the case. 5 days later, photos that were taken in October 2019, which showed officers posing inappropriately and reenacting the carotid restraint used on McClain, big joke, folks, taken at the site he was detained, were discovered. One officer resigned and three were fired. And, again, I'm wondering what the current consequences are to the actual way people are being treated in Aurora and the actual fate of the police officers who murdered him. That is, of course, the key thing for me. When we have all this talk about sheriffs, oversight commissions that have no power, no disciplinary power, and no real responsibility for past negligence and criminal behavior by the sheriff's department, that means it's simply kind of a whitewash of what's going on and an attempt to engage in token activity that is not really related to real police accountability. I did find one more story under the name Nathan Woodyard. He's one of the principal killers, or sounds likely he's one of the principal killers. And the headline reads, it's in the Atlanta Black Star, which looks like an African-American paper. Sufficient evidence to establish probable cause. Five former Aurora police officers and paramedics to stand trial on 32 charges in Elijah McClain's death. And there's a description of course, the entire gruesome obscenity. And the question is, when is the trial? Where is it? This is what? How many? It's at least 3 years now after August 24th, 2019, when McClain was throttled to death and then shot up with ketamine. So, looking for the actual trial date, I don't find it, but that's the most recent thing I found. But one way to pursue it, if you're interested, is look for the officers involved in their trial, because Nathan Woodyard is the one of the officers who apparently did it.
So also, I was just in the bench last few hours, and they're in the Sonia Rana, the mayor, and all these reports about how, the water is going into the river from the tap that we got put there by court order. Otherwise, there was going to be no water for people. Yeah. So now, they got rid of the drainage system, and so what's happening is becoming muddy.
Yes.
And gross. And that's supposed to be healthier for the world. It's incredible. So maybe what we need to do is organize a bunch of us to show up at the back of the county building on Thursday, and then I think. And the other thing is, I think I definitely will go to the other. I'll go up to Gulf Links tomorrow, or whatever they're calling it now, in the Armory, and go to 1220 and see if we can do an accurate counting of what's available there, take photos of it, and
video and pictures, yes.
Yeah, so we'll take pictures of it, and it might be good. I mean, last time I went by myself, and Jeremy Leonard threatened to have me arrested and stuff, so. I said, I'm on union business. So he said, oh, you want to call the police? I'll call the police right now for you. And then he disappeared. I think we should do like an inspection tomorrow to make sure there's the 10 spaces they say is available for everybody who are there.
I think there is a point of concern here in regards to what exactly is available. I think you made a really good point just now.
The speaker in the back of the room is speaking up here.
Absolutely have to document this. That when we go before the city council, whichever one of us do, this coming Tuesday, or next Tuesday rather.
A week from Tuesday.
We absolutely need to be able to say.
The next city council meeting is going to be the second Tuesday in September, so it'll be... it'll be a week from next Tuesday. There you go.
This is what is happening. And here you go. So, I'm ready to do that with you.
Okay.
And we'll go from
there. Great. Okay, perfect.
And I did talk to Keith today at the Huff meeting. He answered a phone call and gave us a report. We didn't get any news on the number of beds available. In fact, I think what I'm going to do now is give him a quick call and see if he can add to that report. But I've not been able to reach him. So I'm hoping I'll be able to have more information for you on Sunday. But the point is, here at this meeting that was happening on the 29th, there was actual specific actions being proposed. And not just undertaken by Keith, but with other people in the audience volunteering to assist as well.
So I'm Robert. I work with Huff. I think the suggestions that Lise has made, that Keith proposes for tomorrow, and a lot of the things that you said, Robert, are important to act on. I mean, that's really, we don't have the numbers that we did in the last two meetings, but we still have some folks who are roused enough by this situation to want to do something. And even a small number of people can begin to do something. I mean, that was why I cooked up this latest flyer, which I'm a big fan of flyers, as you may have noticed. But the strategies that have been proposed are all kinds of different strategies. But the important point is that we choose one and start doing it. Start out of this meeting, start doing it. Even if only for a small number of people, doing a small number of real, tangible things. That's what I think is important. So, for instance, one of the suggestions I've had, this is not to in any way suggest the other suggestion shouldn't be done. I think if any of these appeal to you, and maybe Keith's already proposed a Thursday one, Elise has proposed storage, Martin versus Boise education, and additionally, I don't know what your third one was, but they all sounded good. We need to actually pick one. Ones that I propose that we haven't talked about yet are, first of all, organizing events in areas that they're likely to start, if they do this sectioning off salami approach. And I have no idea what they're doing. People who have their ears to the, you know, the authorities may know better than I. But they may, who knows, maybe they'll start from one end of the park or the other end of the park. Maybe they won't. But if they're going to, we should pick the area they're likely to do and start holding meetings in that area to encourage the folks, that is to say, if the folks who live there, some of them want to hold those meetings. Here, people can't get to these meetings. They don't get to them. There's no food available here. It's a nice speaking forum, but it isn't a place where people in the benchlands can come. This will be nearer in the benchlands to people's homes and their property. So I would say they're more likely to be able to attend a meeting, keep an eye on their stuff, particularly if you do it only in the section that you think is going to be sliced off, that they're going after. So that's one proposal I have, as well as the idea, I think, a good, again, I'll reiterate, to have somebody, as has been already proposed, go up tomorrow and start figuring out exactly what's going on with the number of shelter spaces that are supposedly there, whether they're indoor or outdoor, and so forth, what's going on. Another strategy, this is all on the back of this flyer that I gave out. I don't have to necessarily reiterate everything, but the city did say for 4 months they're going to be funding the bathroom. The bathrooms, they have bathrooms. They have dirty porta potties, pretty much. That's their claim. At least they have appropriated money. At the same time as they're slicing things up, they put down money supposedly so that they can pause if they have problems with the Martin versus Boise requirement, which I think they're ignoring. They ignored it hitherto. Nobody has taken it to court, not the Union of the Homeless, not Huff, not the ACLU, nobody. There have been all kinds of encampments that have been trashed by the police, and people have been stuffed into the benchlands, and there's been no legal action, even though that is all, if you follow Martin versus Boise and you believe in the indoor requirement, inappropriate, illegal. And, of course, it's inappropriate to shove people into an unsafe situation. That was the basis of the injunction 2 years ago, that it was unsafe for them to do what they were doing. And so because of the community and because you had a lawyer on board and you had Alicia and Keith and others working on it, you got that very quickly, and that was good.
Was it because of COVID also?
Because of
COVID?
Yes, very much so. I would say that's true. That because of the COVID, it's killing the occasional person still. It's still there. And, it's, for some people, it's a serious concern. Some people are wearing masks, and they choose to do that. Whether it's effective or not is another question, but that's not the issue. Student organizing. I mean, campuses are coming back. It would be helpful if a house person and a benchlands person went up and started flyering people on the campuses and trying to get them to come down. I went to the next meeting, and again, I suggest the next meeting be held in a place down in the benchlands where people can go with food, so people will come, even though it's, you know, it's a hook. Another thing to remember is you can confront public officials in public much more readily than you can at city council and supervisors' meetings, because they can pull these kinds of things that Keith was talking about. A new law, which I haven't looked at yet, which supposedly overrules the precedent that I thought I had set when I did this to the city council, advocating, you know, saying, Sieg Heil, city council. And they tried to have me, they had me removed, but the court found out that that was inappropriate. You can't take someone out of a meeting unless they're actually being, stopping the meeting, not because you think it might stop the meeting, because you're afraid it's going to stop the meeting. It's only if it stops the meeting in a persistent way. But now that may have been changed, but I think it's still a constitutional argument. Anyway, it's easier, though, to go and catch people in public, because in public, you have more rights. You have more rights on the street. You have more rights inside city council. It's called a limited public forum. It's not the same as a full public forum out in the street. So if you want to talk to Bruner, shout her down in the streets. If you want to talk to Ratner, go to him there, or go to his office. You know, that's something. The office is right next to the whole Benchlands area. It's very close. That could be organized too. And finally, again, I guess it's in this flyer, so check it out, because there are many, many options. But it's important that we choose one and do it. And it's because we can talk here all day and come back next week, and it doesn't matter unless we do it. And so let's do it.
But first, a little musical counseling from David Rovics.
Particularly of developments in Great Britain lately in terms of people going around with sledgehammers and smashing arms manufacturers' factories until they shut down in some cases, like in the town of Oldham outside of Manchester. Protests were going on. They were going on for years. And then Palestine action started smashing up the gears. And that's when the people got up off of their seats, took their families into town and blockaded the streets. For 3 days and nights you could hear the banners swing, though no one knew for sure what the future might bring. They knew one thing for certain, these weapons of war must not be sent to the ports they're heading for. So this is a note to Elbit Systems, you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. After smashing up equipment and smashing a whole bunch, a lot of folks began developing a hunch. The cops took 3 full days to send anyone inside, and after 15 hours, they let the charges slide. It seems the prosecutors understood the climb, British companies aiding and abetting war crimes. The factory in Oldham had to close its gate, and the muralists in Palestine said that's smashing great. So this is a note to Elbit Systems, you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. All around the country, hammers being swung, showing civil disobedience is stronger than the tongue. Taking action here so the weapons go nowhere, so they don't get set to the alley, because we know what they'll do there. And so does the Prime Minister and the men who he supports, selling weapons to war criminals who don't want to go to court, who don't want to face the facts, what they've done, where the bullets go when they fired from the guns. This is a note to Elbit Systems, you will be shut down when the sledgehammers of justice come to town. This is a no 12-bit systems, you will be shut down. When the sledgehammers of justice come to town.
Like the city kids, their own words got in trouble back when the pandemic was going, is homeless people don't count. That's what got them in trouble during the pandemic, you know, encampments. That was one of the things I told Keith, remember?
Right.
Two, why aren't they offering these people vouchers to go to San Jose? Because you have to afford up. You have to be here for a year when you get it. And why do you keep giving them out if there's no places taking them?
Right.
And it's up to you.
So that's the mission.
There has to be one. Right.
Do you think the people in the Benchlands, anybody or how many, do you think that they would potentially organize and move to...
Yeah, there are people going up there right now.
Before, they're going up there right now.
There's people going back up there from there. But here's the deal. There's an encampment law. I don't know why I know this. But you can't be around certain things. You can't be next to a creek. There's a flaws. I mean, there's limits. As in, you're not supposed to be up there, but I thought there's something on the books and someone left it. If you need a place to be, you can go there to camp. I don't know if I remember right.
Yeah, so the couple of issues. One of them is it's a haul to go up there, you know, if you're carrying your stuff. So this has been a barrier. And then we couldn't take if you go to the gates, they have something like 8 to 10 locks on each gate. So when we investigated cutting all the locks, it was like, oh my God. And then it's very steep and everything. So a ton of people can't really access en masse the Pogonip. So then what's happened is, like what Bob's saying, is that small numbers of people go up there.
They're hiding and they've got places where they can't be seen. But see, the sheriffs and all, they're still going up there because they're not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to allow this garden to go up there. Why don't they build a place for people to be able to go and have spend time and take care of work?
I agree with you completely. I love what you're speaking. I love what you're saying. I just really appreciate you answering that question, too.
I always thought that. I mean, I'm kind of one of the persons, I hate seeing people make a mess. I hate garbage. I'm a clean person.
Yeah.
You know, and there's people out there that are doing it, but these people are in these tents, these little groups. They're not really sticking by. They're waiting for everybody else to carry their weight.
And yeah, there's a lot of, that's been difficult to mobilize people to really take responsibility. But a lot of people are telling me they just aren't going to leave. I don't know what that really will mean for them, but I hear that a lot, particularly sort of close to your neighborhood, like the Mexican neighborhood. They're like, no, we're not leaving.
How about if we go downtown? How about, and by the way, thank you for coming to the city council meeting. I don't know your name, sir, with the eye patch.
Kazoo.
Okay. And some other people were there. There was a really respectable showing of people at the city council meeting. They spoke from direct experience of homelessness. And it was a really great meeting. I don't want to belabor that because I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned people who attended. But what do you think of, instead of moving, which people are pointing out is so arduous, and it takes a lot to get the trucks and so forth and so on, how about if we ask people to come to us? We want house people to come. People can table. They can set up and start talking to people about all this stuff. I had my car taken. It was worth $4,500. I was just about to deal with it. You know, these stories that when you're involved in organizing with homeless people and people experiencing homelessness, we hear so much of year after year after year. This thing about the city moving us to places that don't exist, and they're going to provide this extra shuttle and that extra place. It's a big game, right? They're whack-a-mole. That's one of what Amanda, a lady who spoke at city council, said. So how about if we cordon off, like, City Hall, the library, people are anyway, and downtown and say, look, this like Portland did, and say, we're going to stay here, we're going to table, we'd like to have people to come to us and talk to us about what's happening in our lives, but we're tired of moving.
Yeah, occupied.
Hi, everybody, I'm Commander X.
Hi, Commander.
Thank you for the greeting. I don't know, maybe we should take a page from an old Santa Cruz hero, Phil Free. Maybe we should all go camp on the mayor's lawn.
There we go.
And anyway, on a serious note, there's a couple of things that have stuck out to me tonight. I really want to try to emphasize them. I like what Robert said, we need to do something. First of all, I think these meetings have been incredibly helpful. I think really, if anything is going to get done about this, it's these meetings that are going to get it done. There's nothing else that really beats organizing, and these meetings have been working. As an outsider coming in to visit you and to help out by doing some live streaming and everything, I've seen sort of a bell curve here. You know, I saw a bunch of people that first week, and then the second, last week, of course, we had a really good number of people, and now it's kind of faded back down. I think that we've run our course here in this hall. And I think that Robert's suggestion that you continue these meetings down in the benchlands is, in my mind, essential. I mean, you're not gonna make it without them. So I would encourage whatever it takes to get that done, to make those meetings happen. It's probably going to be a lot of work. I mean, the average person isn't going to want to go sit in the dirt. So you're going to have to think it through. You're going to have to think through not just how you make yourselves comfortable for a meeting, but how do we get the community involved? How do we get housed people down there to participate? So I think it's important. I think it's something you should work on right now, starting like tonight and tomorrow. The other thing that really weeps out to me, and I've talked about this with every homeless person from the bench lines I could get to listen to me. I talked about it last week. I'm going to say it again. We people like myself who live in homes, we have skills and we want to help. I'm a live streamer. Okay, there would be nothing more potent than having me with tens of thousands of fans watching a live stream of a police raid in the benchlands. How do I find that out? How do I know when the cops are down there? How do I know when you're getting evicted? So there has to be some work done on building lines of communication between those who live there and those of us. And that takes, again, that takes actually you folks living in the benchlands to make that happen. I can't make that happen for you. All I can do is be there for you when I get the call. So those are two things. Try to organize to keep these meetings every Monday in the benchlands, and try to work on a plan, some sort of media committee that you can vote on, a group of people. They need to have a phone. They need to, you know, we can probably work on getting them some data, you know what I mean, for their phone. But we need to be able to have, and I think there should be a social media presence right from out of the camp. For instance, Twitter is incredibly powerful. I have personally run dictators out of their country using Twitter. Not even exaggerating. Okay, that's how powerful Twitter is. Okay, so Twitter, focus on that, and then we could show you guys how to live stream as well. But we need those lines of communication. We need to be able to work on that. So those are my two suggestions. Good luck.
Direct response, and then you can say whatever you want, and everybody can say whatever they want.
I like that idea of being in the front of the county building, because for a whole bunch of reasons I like that idea.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's a great idea, and flyering and wearing our homeless union T-shirts maybe.
So they know.
But what are we going to aim for? Like, what is the flyer
going to
say?
Oh, no, we're aware of what they're doing.
We might have two people who might talk.
Wait, one person at a time.
I'm sorry. I have two people.
This is direct response.
Okay,
let's be organizing after a little bit here. And so, Kazoo, what are we...
It's part of the organization.
Greg, did you want to speak?
They have to give us someplace to...
But are we talking about a meeting? Aren't we trying to organize more people to come to our meeting?
This is actually what I was going to talk about. What I was going to talk about is
and Union of the Homeless tried to hold meetings endlessly at these tables in back of the courthouse. And we never got much of a response. Even when we went through the, you know, the bench lines telling people, I think you've got to go into the bench lines, down there where they are. That's why I suggest you do it in phases, wherever you think the next eruption is going to be of bulldozers and cops.
There's sure and, no water to come. They already do it.
I'm
on the other side of it.
Right. So
all those the dumpsters have.
Right. So why not start there? Where and in other words, the whole point being to organize the people who are there. I think, and I disagree, I guess, with the idea that we want to make a good impression on the county officials or the people going to the courthouse. Frankly, it's like I don't know, black people trying to show, oh no, we're not shiftless. No. I mean, you organize people who are whose interest it is to be organized. It's their interest that you not be organized. I mean, they think it's just fine to have police drive people away, compassionately, of course, and with, you know, case managers and all that sort of thing. So I
just want to point out that the question that we were supposed to be addressing right now is meetings.
Is what?
Meeting.
Right.
How do we get people from the bench lines? How do we
You go to them. You go to them. That's my suggestion.
Well, I don't think that's right. Can we continue to have the discussion without massive amounts of ideology? Let's just stay focused on coming together and deciding amongst ourselves how many people like Robert's idea. It's a good idea. How many people want to do it that way? Go to the bench
lines. Yeah, I think why don't we meet in front of Troy's house?
What's going on?
And because it's wider there, and we just set up, we bring a table down.
Is Troy here?
What?
Is Troy here?
No, but I mean, Troy's not going to care if we're in front of his house.
Yeah. When you're present somewhere and you have short for people there, and
yeah, we just said because it's nice.
That means a lot.
I think that it's a fine idea. I just want us to come together on it. Are people here willing to go to the French lands? I'll go.
And what time?
I say one at the middle of the day. Would that be
better? Yes, that's best. Sure, if a lot of people are going early, you're like afternoon, you know, people.
Well, so I don't think you want to go after dark. It doesn't sound...
No, not after dark.
Safe. So how about, you know, sometime like 1, 2, 12, yeah, something like that?
We want to be there at 5 o'clock. When they come out of that, in the courthouse, we want to be there.
So what's happening here, in spite of apparent chaos and many voices at the same time, is people are coming together to make decisions, and they make them, which to me is really a novel phenomenon at these kind of meetings. It's really great.
Back or whatever, we want them to know.
Can we just clarify right now? Okay, I'm going to clarify the point. Right now we're discussing where the next meeting is going to happen. Kazoo has been talking about going up to the doors and the plaza in front of the county building. And Kazoo's talking about outreaching to the workers coming out of the county building, the public officials. Now, some people are saying that Robert is saying he's not into that idea. So I just want to ask for a show of hands. This doesn't have to be like your final feeling, but show of hands, how many people would like to also, in addition to organizing a meeting at the benchlands, would like to also outreach to the workers in front of the county building. Just a tentative show of hands. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is that a hand, sir? 6, 7, 8, 9. Did I count you? Okay. So we have some interest in that. So do we want to do that on the same day that we're having the meeting in the benchlands?
That'd be early. Sure.
Yeah. You said yes. Any other comments?
You know, like start at 3 or 4 o'clock. A lot of people down there don't get up, or they're not between 10 and 3. You won't see anybody. It's just hard.
So, what's a good day for everybody to do this?
I guess 3 or 4 o'clock.
That's about 3 o'clock on a Wednesday.
3 o'clock on a Wednesday. How do people feel about it?
I just want to voice a concern that I have about doing two things at once. Here's my concern: the people at the benchlands aren't here. Troy isn't here. It's going to be kind of a big deal if all of us organizers descend upon the bench lands in front of Troy's house and not only have a meeting, but then also at that meeting say, okay, now everybody, we're going to go way over here, we're going to do this other thing. So I'm just concerned about us thinking suicide? I just want to
first organize the meeting. First organize the people with the bench lines is what I suggest.
Awareness. That's the bottom line. And just say, the protest versus going to the front, don't give them flyers, have your shirts. But when you go to the bench lines, be there, people seeing him as representative for the homeless. Awareness and presence is more powerful than someone saying something like, they're ready for me to come back and tell them what's going on, 10 people.
My thing is, you're wrong on this.
Can we just decide on a time?
Okay.
And that we're going to meet in the bench lines. Is there any objection to meeting in the bench lines? Is anybody going to show up? I'll show up in the bench lines. If, you know, yeah, you know.
I'm
ambulatory.
I can't decide if I can show up if I don't know what time
I'm going to do. Right, so what about a proposed, and you were suggesting 3 o'clock?
I was thinking 3 o'clock on a Wednesday, one, because I'll be done delivering food.
How does that sound for people?
Perfect.
That sounds good. How many people can come at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday?
3 o'clock on a Wednesday.
That's a goodly number of people.
Yeah,
I will try to turn out a flyer mentioning.
But not this Wednesday because we have a concert.
Yeah,
and I'm overwhelmed.
And eventually it turned out to be 3 o'clock on a Friday, and that's when it is. Tomorrow, Friday at 3 o'clock in the benchlands in front of Troy's tent, which you can find either by walking into the Water Street entrance off of Water Street into the benchlands encampment. Just start walking through the benchlands, and you'll see on your left side a large tent which says, I think it's a Go Brandon, and it also has a big white door, a real actual physical door, and it's next to a tent. This is on your left side as you head in the direction of the footbridge from Water Street. As walking through the campground, you will see that's where the meeting will be. Presumably you'll see a bunch of folks there as well. Maybe a table. Keith has said he's bringing coffee and some T-shirts. Hopefully that'll happen, and that's going to happen at 3 o'clock. So here's another by David Rovics. And the last one, I think it was the last one, is something about sledgehammers. I don't have, unfortunately, a program for this, but here's another one.
At the end of World War III, amid the lightning and thunder, those left alive, as long as they live, will wonder, was there something that could have been done before nuclear winter blocked out the sun after the earth that we once knew was blown asunder? At the end of World War III, any pundits who may still be found will have heated debates about how the end came round. Was it the Black Sea blockade when the rush for the end times was made, or the breaking of promises promised when the wall came down? At the end of World War III, as people look for clean water to drink, as they're dreaming of the days when they had a kitchen sink, wishing they could try again to talk to belligerent men back when we were hanging on the brink. At the end of World War III, when everyone has the same thought, is this what imperial intransigence wrought? Life under occupation, or the end of creation? Decisions that decades of lost opportunities brought. At the end of World War III, with billions dead or dying, it won't matter who was right and who was lying. When civilization has ended,
Once the last warhead's descended, only then will there be no left denying. At the end of World War III, as the few left alive survey the rubble remain, wondering how long they'll survive. Too late to question the story of expansion or conquest or glory. No time to rewind from the date Armageddon arrived. At the end of World War III.
And that was, I'm pretty sure, I think I've heard it before, at the end of World War III. And you can find David Rovics playing this, I guess from his home, on YouTube. And now let's jump back, or wander back, to Pacific Avenue. Here's something from August 19th as I made my way up and down the street. On Pacific Avenue, and the machine here is not working too well, or I'm not doing too well with it. So we just had an interview with Terry, who has a dog, Raven. He's been in Monterey for 7 years, though he was previously here in Santa Cruz. Howdy. And the merchants are friendly as ever. I asked him what the difference was between now and 7 years ago. And he said people are colder than they were. He's a vet. He's trying to raise money for a dog cart for his 11-year-old dog, I think, who's got sore paws. He was a man with amplified sound doing some singing. It's Brandon Jonas, free music, and looking for donations. There are, I hadn't noticed, and this is one something Terry brought up, now printed numbers in faint yellow paint on the sidewalk to give vendors different spaces to be at. And so that's interesting. But it's kind of sparse. The time of day now is around 11:30. Now it's getting closer to 11:45. And we have another amplified sound guy with a bucket strumming away, presumably with a permit. Howdy. I guess you know the tune. Oh Lord, I'm stuck in the dying. You remember that? I do not, but I'm listening.
Old Credence, 74.
I came in on a greyhound. I'll be walking out if I go. Well, I was just passing through. Must be 7 months or more. I came into town on a one-night stand. It looks like my plans fell through. Oh, Lord, I'm stuck in Lodi again. The man from the magazine, well, he said I was on my way. Well, somewhere we lost connection, ran out of songs to play. I come into town on a one-night stand. It looks like my plans fell through. Oh, Lord, I'm stuck in Lodi again. Oh, Lord, I'm stuck in Lodi again.
And we've been listening to the music of...
We are listening to the music of Creedence Clearwater by a band called Richard's Brother.
And played by?
Richard's Brother.
Richard's Brother.
Yeah.
You are the one-man band.
I am the one-man band. Really, you're recording it?
I am. It's for free radio, pirate radio.
Oh, cool.
It's, you know, pretty low. We aren't even radioing. We're netting, so there you are. Cool. How is it going here? Any sense of how... I see $1 in the can. That's good.
$1 in.
Some people get upset, you know, when you're out here. Guy down there turns up to 10, you know, and no one can hear you. You can't hear him right now. He's playing over there. You want an original?
Sure. Particularly if it's about people on the street. That's what interests me particularly.
Yeah, I'm just trying to stay off the streets right now.
I understand.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear you.
Yeah. Got laid off at a high-tech company with three initials. The first one starts with I. The second one, the third one starts with M.
How long ago?
About 3 years. 4 years. Yeah.
In Santa Cruz ever since?
I was in Santa Cruz when it happened.
And now you're back again.
Back again.
Do you have a place to live, or are you...
No. So far, yeah. Got a place to live.
Now,
it's all good.
Were you doing professional music at that time, too, or...?
No. This is my retirement gig.
How does it feel?
It feels nice to have to work for that company anymore.
And what about being on the street playing?
It's got its challenges, yeah. I mean, yesterday I put in a lot of hours. My body hurts. Don't really make enough money to barely cover gas.
How long is your commute?
About 10 minutes. Yeah.
And you're paying rent as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Eating, I suppose.
Yeah, eating.
Do you eat at Food Not Bombs?
I'm sorry, say that again?
It's a free food distribution thing. Every day at the town clock at noon, they have a meal from 12 to 3. If you ever get, hungry and you feel like it, it's a place to go.
Yeah, cool. But I'm doing okay. I leave that for the people down here that need it. Yeah.
Everybody needs to eat. Keep that in mind.
Everybody needs to eat.
Well, you're going to play one of your own compositions if you want.
Yeah, let me see. Tomorrow's an illusion. It may never come. Today is when you're living. Do your best and have some fun. If love should come along, take it with you when you go. Tomorrow's an illusion, today is what you know, it's what you know. See the people coming, walking down the street, laughing and singing to everyone they meet, saying love's the only thing you take with you and you go. Tomorrow's an illusion, today is what you know, it's what you know. Can't believe in Buddha, Jesus Christ, and all the two. You can't believe in money, and you can't believe in you. Love's the only thing you take with you when you go. Tomorrow's an illusion. Today is what you know. It's what you know. Take a chance, live your dreams, give it one good shot. Maybe you will stumble and maybe you will not. Better to try and fail and give it one good go. Tomorrow's an illusion, today is what you know, it's what you know. Tomorrow's an illusion, today is what you know, it's what you know.
Yow.
Yeah.
And the name of that tune?
Tomorrow's an Illusion.
from Ricardo?
Yes, from Richard's brother. Absolutely.
Are you online with your music? Or?
No, not yet.
You got to actually meet you in person to hear what you're going to sing.
Yeah, for right now. That's the deal. Okay, let me focus and get going here.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for stopping.
Thank you. No hassles from the hosts or anything.
What's that?
The police haven't been hassling you.
No, not so far.
And they're not demanding a fee or a permit?
No. If you're too close to a door or if you're too loud.
They come and they say something. Yeah. You say that the merchant up here has been a little picky or...
I've never had a problem.
Something about drowning you out, you were saying?
Well, sometimes people turn up very loudly. The guy down here is cranked up really high. And it's
one of the people in the brick and mortar, or
no, another street player.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can happen for sure.
Saturdays for sure.
Shall I call you Richard or?
Oh, no, call me Greg.
Greg, I'm Robert Greg. Here's my card. This is where you can be. You can hear what's archived.
Okay.
And let me put something in your pot here.
Cool.
So I'm usually pretty tight with my.
Not bad, right?
For no, you know, and what do you got to rehearse in order to play, right?
Yeah.
I'm doing interviews for pirate radio. How's life on the streets?
Oh, life on the streets? Well, I am lucky enough to have a home, so I
Good.
Live indoors. But life on the streets is, as a street musician, is very trying.
Tell me about it.
Well, all the noise, all the racket, all the people playing their, you know, their devices. You know, they're losing their minds out here. And
here you are with an acoustic guitar.
Acoustic guitar and somewhat of a mind still left. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it looks like it.
But, yeah, I'm concerned.
Or sounds like it.
I'm concerned about the people out here who want to be heard, and yet they're not going about it the right way. You know what I mean? They want to be heard, but their way of expressing themselves is objectionable.
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to be objectionable.
Mm-hmm.
But I often am. I can be pushed to the brink of being objectionable.
There's
you know,
a lot of things to object to, you know. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
People aren't
but
paid what they're worth.
On the streets, for those living out here, it must be tougher than ever. And my heart goes out to them. Anyone living on the street, living in the bush, living in a car.
It will be when they're trying to push people out of the benchlands. That's going to happen soon.
Yeah, scary stuff, scary stuff. My heart goes out to them. I know it's easy to lose your mind, being homeless, to lose your mind.
Because have you been homeless?
Oh, yeah. I was homeless living in a car for 5 years.
Santa Cruz?
For about 2 years in this town. Then I got help. I got back to school. I got a couple of associate's degrees. I was able to get a voucher to get myself off the street because I was disabled. And I try to tell other people, demand a housing voucher. Keep going until you get one. Demand one. And then I finally got mine.
How long did it take?
I was only on a waiting list 6 months. I waited a whole year. And then I on a waiting list, and then I realized I need to go back in and talk to them and sort of demand help, which I did. And I got help within 6 months. I had a voucher and a roof over my head. But, I mean, I pretty much had to really vouch for myself, big time.
Who did you have to demand from?
Well, I mean, I went over to what used to be called the HSC, Homeless Service Center.
Housing Matters.
Housing Matters, which I think is the dumbest name.
Funding Matters, actually.
Co-op some other person's name. I mean, that was stupid. But, yeah, Funding Matters. They helped me out. You know, I didn't believe it when I saw, hey, we've housed 650 people, you know, a big banner they had out front. But I was one of them, so, I mean, now I believe it, you know.
How long have you been in housing, though?
For going on 4 years, you know, and you got to mind your P's and Q's. You got to pay your rent. You got to behave. You got to talk to your landlord. Once you have one of those vouchers, can't take it for granted, you know. So you got to stay on top of it.
Do you know people who've lost their vouchers because of problems?
No, but, I mean, I always have that fear of losing mine, so I stay on top of it. But, no, I guess it would be hard to lose one. I mean, you have to really act up, but... you know, you got to stay on your meds. You know, I'm just, I hope people do the right thing. Once they do get off the street, just stay off, you know. But anyway, that's all I got.
All right, and we've been talking with, if you wish to say.
That's all I got.
Give yourself a name.
All right. I'm an A student out here.
I'll call you A student.
I'm Andy.
Oh, Andy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Robert Andy.
Pleasure to meet you, Robert.
Yeah,
good
you too.
Good project.
Sure, let me give you a... So, some weeks ago, maybe even a month or two, I interviewed a vendor who was getting hassled for vending on Beach Street. I ran into Glenn again, I think it was actually yesterday, and he was on Pacific Avenue, and here's what happened. Or I should say, here's what we talked about. So today is August 31st. It's about 4:05 on Pacific Avenue in the shade, thank goodness. And I'm talking with a man who we spoke with about a month ago, seems like maybe a couple weeks, who vends down on Beach, or tries to, and has been having problems with authorities who are banning vending during the summer on Beach. Correct me if at any time I'm wrong when anything I say. And he tells me that that he has had all of his tickets except for one, which he only paid a $20 fine on rather than $360.
The three of the four were improper. They were not filled out correctly. So the city actually did do something right for once. and are only charging me for the one ticket, but because of my hardship fee waiver form that I filled out, the $100 ticket went down to $20. And I haven't paid that yet, but to get my cart out, my sticker cart out, it was $325 originally, and they reduced it to $65.
And how long was your cart held?
My cart was held from, what is that, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 10 days.
How many days business did you feel you lost? Would you have been working with that cart?
At least 7.
And, of course, they didn't refund you that money.
No, I have to fill out a form to a claim with the clerk's office to get reimbursed for my loss of income.
Wow. And they offered that to you or not?
Yes, they did.
Amazing. That's impressive. So you also said there were other positive things the city did that perhaps might have surprised you. Certainly surprised me.
It's actually all really surprised me, other than the fact that they did vandalize my cart in the process of the confiscation.
And so it got back intact?
No, it was not.
It was not intact.
The wheels were not intact. And I have video of them putting it into the community service officer's truck. And I asked them to please strap it down, to please put it this way, let me load it, it's my cart, let me load it up, if you're confiscating it, let me keep it safe, and the wheels are inoperable.
Wow. And so while you initially were telling me that you would give the city credit for expediting the return of the damaged cart, it was still a damaged cart, and B, you haven't yet gotten any kind of compensation for it.
No. That is correct.
Is this going to affect...
That is correct.
Okay. Is this going to affect your business approach to Beach? Are you going to go back there? Is it going to deter you? How does it feel?
No, I was able to get my permit for Pacific Avenue roaming, because it's a mobile cart, you know, so it's roaming. I don't have to stay in one place. And then I have also a permit for Zone 1 now as well. But I cannot go onto Beach Street.
Are they still banning people from...
Yes, they are still banning people from Beach Street. I have to stay in Zone 1, which is by Las Palmas, across the street from the aquarium.
When I drove along Beach Street, I did notice a few carts off on the side streets. And are they universally banning carts, or are they letting some favored people come in and do their carts?
I am not a racist, but... I am the first citizen to get a permit for those zones. Everybody else who is over there, who has been there, are green card holders. They're not citizens, and they gave them the permits first. But I put my foot down after the confiscation of my cart, and now I'm able to be only in Zone 1 or Pacific Avenue.
And how far does Zone 1 extend?
Zone 1 is solely on the corner of Front and Pacific, across from the aquarium. And there's other permit holders that are green card holders in Zone 1, 2, and 3. They would not allow me to get Zone 2 or 3. They said only Zone 1.
Zone 2 and 3 would be where?
Zone 2 is on Main, Beach in Main. And Zone 3 is, I forget the name of the street, but it's at the bowling alley.
I got you. I know where that is. So, how do other vendors respond to this?
Everybody has just been... upset about it. Everybody's been upset about it. Many people who know me, and they're upset about it. They don't agree with it. They think it's wrong. They don't think it's fair. It's not good, right, or true what the city is doing, even though the city has been nice. And the city has at least given me the hardship fee waiver. I respect that.
How long did it take you to get that?
10 days.
But didn't you ask about it at some point earlier in the summer?
Yes, I did, indeed.
And it wasn't forthcoming?
No. No, they had to confiscate my property before that happened.
And you had to complain loudly about it, I would imagine.
Which is exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. And that's what, I made a stance, and I kept going to Beach Street. I didn't stop. I didn't, I'm selling artwork that's turned into a sticker. It's artwork that's hand-drawn and it's turned into a sticker from a print shop that's owned here in Santa Cruz. It's not outsourced.
I get it. So, I know you mentioned before that Pacific Avenue is not necessarily the best business venue, or it wasn't some months ago. How is it now?
It's worse.
Yeah.
I mean, school went back in, and there's not as much traffic. And if I was to be sitting here all day today, what is it, 4, hopefully 4:20.
yeah, coming up.
Yeah, so, you know, if I was to be sitting here from 8 to 4:20, I would maybe make $40, $50. There's no flow. There's no traffic. There's no pedestrian traffic. Whereas if I was on Beach Street, I would have made at least $300 today.
That's quite a difference.
Quite a difference. Quite an impact on my income and the livelihood for my son.
How... what's your analysis of the business scene here? It looks like a lot of the businesses are empty. Do you notice, and you're a man who's been around Santa Cruz for a while, right?
Correct.
Do you notice a return of business, or mostly not?
No. And the whole thing about this is that if the businesses have a problem with the street vendors, then they have a problem with their own establishment.
Have you had any complaints from businesses, or have the police advised you that the businesses don't like you on Pacific?
Not me personally, no.
But have you heard this about other vendors? Have they experienced this?
No, I have not. I stay to myself, and I operate my business the way that I operate it. It's not that I don't care about the people, but it's like I don't care about how they go about their business. I only care about how I go about my business.
Dig it. And if you wish to say, we've been talking with
Glenn Clark.
Thank you, man. Anything you want to say about this?
Not in particular. I appreciate that.
Sure. Thank you. All right, go ahead. We're talking with Terry. Go ahead, Terry.
There's an old woman that sleeps on the bench across the street. She's threatened to kill me multiple times. She said derogatory things about me. I've reported her to the police. The police do nothing about her. I caught her urinating in public with her pants down, reported it to the police. The police do nothing. People running around here screaming, I hate you, fuck you. I can't deal with that. And I won't deal with it.
I remember last time we talked about your brother and,
yes,
and how you're essentially still having a period of mourning for his death.
Absolutely. I'll be having that for years.
And this is Terry and his dog, Raven, who I mentioned earlier that I'd had an interview that I'd lost. This is a more recent interview. All right. And it'd be nice to have a little peace and quiet.
For example,
Indeed.
Yeah. Just imagine when they kick those 800 people out over there.
Right.
What it's going to be down like down here. It's going to be utter chaos. And just look around you. Half of Pacific Street is gone from what it used to be. When I used to live here, every business was opening and open and thriving. Now, you can't walk nowhere on Pacific Street without finding out closed.
It's true. That's what you're saying is true. So we talked before about how you found Monterey. I don't know, did you find it a better environment at the time we talked? You were very optimistic
yes,
when I talked
yes,
to you.
Yes, it's the police don't harass. As long as you're not causing a problem, you're cleaning up after yourself, you're not doing drugs in the open or drinking in the open or doing nothing wrong, they won't bother you at all. But if you misbehave, then they will come looking for you.
And as I recall, you and your associate canine friend here
mm-hmm.
were waiting for a cart because he's developed sore paws and
yes.
he needs to be able to be yes. helped out on occasion.
Absolutely. The cart will be here tomorrow.
And that cost a pretty penny, several hundred dollars, right?
$161.
How long did it take you? Was there much generosity in the community on that, or did it take a long time?
That came from my friend Jeff and his lovely niece and Benji Shake from Monterey.
So none of it came from the generous donations on the street?
Not a dime.
Well, you make me blush, I must say.
Like I said, Santa Cruz is not the Santa Cruz I remember and loved. Since I've been back, it's the Santa Cruz I do not like and probably will never like ever again.
Who knows? I might run into you in Monterey. It's possible. I don't go there much.
You're welcome to come and visit.
Where do you usually, are you on the street much there or not?
Yes. I sit right at the top of the Fisherman's Wharf.
Okay, and that would be at the end of... not at the end of Alvarado, but...
No, it's not even on Alvarado. It's on the Fisherman's Wharf.
Which is near Cannery Row, or...
No.
I used to live there, so I should know this.
On Alvarado, you know where the big hotel is, right?
Vaguely.
Okay, so you walk through the hotel, and you'll come to a big, like, park plaza, mm-hmm. big round circle thing. You walk through that circle thing... and you'll end up right on Fisherman's Wharf. That's where the old Fisherman's Grotto's at, Cafe Fina. Let's see, what else is there? There's the Paula Palookas, the place where they filmed Big Little Lies. It's a great Italian restaurant to go. You have Crab Louie's, which has great food, great service. I know all the people there. They're real good friends of mine. They'll bend over backwards to serve you and make sure you have a good time.
And there's Terry.
And there's me. I used to work on the wharf for years.
What did you do?
I was the I ran the sanitation for them.
Huh.
And the city took that job.
How does police treatment compare? I mean, you mentioned the negligence of the police regarding your concerns about this woman that you were hearing this stuff from. But what about other things? What have you noticed?
I'll give you an example. Okay? In Monterey at the Fisherman's Wharf, this old Chinese lady that hated white people come by and kicked my sign and threatened to kill my dog. I called the police. The police came. They asked me to point her out. I pointed her out. They went and handcuffed her. They come back to me and said, well, are you willing to sign a complaint? I said, absolutely. I signed the complaint, and they took her to jail.
And did you ever see her again?
She got out of jail 3 days later, got drunk, and went right back in 20 minutes later.
And after that?
I haven't seen her.
Well, maybe you'll meet up with her when you...
Maybe.
Hopefully not, considering the experience.
I offered to do the same thing with this woman, and they haven't done nothing.
I remember. What about other kind of police behavior toward homeless people? Have you noticed anything around that?
No, I know they go over to that thing over there all the time. They claim that they are over there so much because of all the overdoses that are happening over there.
There's some, for sure. And again, remind me of the name of this sleepy-looking dog.
Raven.
That's right. Terry, thank you. I will.
You're welcome.
It's actually a recording. Now, if I don't lose it, we'll be good.
Yeah, we're going to leave Monday. We would leave this weekend, but there's going to be far too much traffic on the road.
So you'll be hitching?
No, riding on our bikes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You are. That's one of the reasons you needed the cart, because
right. You
travel by bike, and he just...
Yeah.
It's a pain for him to keep up.
Yeah, I took her to the campground the other night. It took 3 hours to walk her up there, because she has to walk very slow. And the campground is only 7 miles.
You're... I'm glad I'm not in your shoes, so to speak. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome. Anytime, Robert. Yes.
England, there will be thousands of folks, I believe, converging on the Houses of Parliament to surround them in solidarity with the imprisoned journalist and editor and founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. And on October 15th, there will be a 24-hour online Assange-a-thon. I just invented that, Assange-a-thon. It's a marathon in solidarity with Julian Assange, but Assange-a-thon has a nice ring to it, or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. And I will be touring in Scandinavia throughout October. So if there's any Scandinavians watching, please feel free to get in touch. And there will apparently be an event in Stockholm related to Julian Assange on October 9th, but this is in the planning stages, as is the entire tour, in fact. Although some of the dates are confirmed and the plane tickets are bought, and I will be there for sure, but and I will definitely be in Denmark, Sweden, and Norway, but how many gigs I'll be doing at any of those places, and whether I'll return home broke or not, it is very much up in the air at the moment. And, but I'll be there. And here's a song I'll be doing, along with many others.
And in case you haven't recognized him, this is David Rovics.
True story.
When Julian met Stella in the embassy, in the only room for 7 years that he would ever see, guarded by police, cops on every street, an unusual situation for the first time you should meet. When Julian met Stella, the time they spent was increasingly within the walls of a little tent. They could have some privacy from the ever-present gaze under which he was spending all his nights and days. When Julian met Stella, there was the chance of grace. Perhaps the president would decide to drop the case. They had two children beneath the watchful eyes of the Americans and British and all kinds of other spies. When Julian met Stella on Embassy Row, it was before he was abducted and forced to go to Belmarsh Prison. Without a chance to speak, awaiting the extradition that the USA seeks. When Julian met Stella, the folks at the UN and people all around the world spoke out then. This journalist belongs among the free, not in prison for exposing crimes against humanity. When Julian met Stella.
And here's the latest update from Keith McHenry, which we heard at the Huff meeting when he gave us his traditional Thursday update, and here it comes.
That's unfortunate.
Well, hopefully we can handle it better this time.
No, no one likes it. But did you see how there's already people living on the levee now? Yeah, it's fucked up. Talk to you soon.
Hey, 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 you're on the radio. For start, use that kind of language, please.
What kind of fucking radio is this?
This is net fucking radio, mister. So,
I like these kind of fucking radios.
Yeah,
okay.
That's why we called you.
Yet today, but that's normal.
So when's the last time you wandered into the benchlands? Mr. Talks a lot.
Oh, about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, really? So we got Troy here, an actual alleged. I don't know if he really lives in the benchlands or just secretly goes in.
Got Troy there.
Well, we're at the Huff meeting. Where else would we be?
Oh, okay.
So, in any case, what's the latest? What are you finding in the benchlands? Why are you there? What are you up to?
Well, I was handing out the flyers for tomorrow's meeting at 3 at the benchlands, and HPHP were down there going door to door. Jeremy was around talking to HPHP, but I don't know if he, you know, what was going on. And I had a lot of flyers, and I noticed that I tried to get there in time to see the intake building be open and talk to people, but it was already closed by 10:30. So that was over. And then I hung out with my friends that have now pitched tents all along the levee. And up against the Wells Fargo, you know, the parking garage near Wells Fargo, and, you know, all that, because that's where people are moving to. Fucking funny.
Interesting. So, yeah. So the people are moving to the levee.
No, these are new on house people that just didn't, when they looked at the levee and heard the news, that they were like, screw that, we're living up here. The only person I know that was from down there was, that moved up there was Bruce and, Wizard. But everybody else was like relatively new on house people with nicer, relatively new tents that are not the tents that I've been handing out. So that's how that is.
Now, what part of the levee are you talking about that they moved to?
Well, there are people living. There's three tents and a little camp right at the corner of Water and River Street, next to the, kind of in this little area that says closed for plant restoration. And then there are more people down by, you know, on the back side of Garage 10. And then there's more people on the levee towards the ocean from the pedestrian bridge. So just like that. It's way it goes. It's already started.
But these are not people moving out of the benchlands, but rather more
not
people.
Some of them were. I mean, Bruce and Wizard were, but the other people didn't appear that they came from there.
Okay.
So.
Do you have any indication of any kind of bulldozing going on or tent removal?
There is one, like rented front end loader with, you know, with a bucket on the back.